shit for a dollar a day. Or whatever vegetables or anything that anybody grew, you know. The pay rate was a dollar a day.
Was that considered good back then, or?
Well, it wasn't really good, but that's what the pay rate was. I mean, you couldn't get it. But in the shops, like in the paper mills and different places that were going at that time, most of the people that worked in the mills got $25 a week, and that was good pay back then in the Depression days, in the 30s. But you couldn't buy a job unless you knew somebody that worked in the plant, and they recommended you. You couldn't even buy a job. You had to be recommended by somebody that worked in the shop.
Did you know of a lot of people that didn't even have a job or no income at all?
There was a lot of people, and they had places during the Depression when they had what they call soup kitchens, and some people that the only food that they got was when the soup kitchens would give them a meal. I mean, they had pictures of it. They had a little dipper or something, and they had a great big cauldron or a big bucket, and they made soup out of it, in it, and you would get soup and maybe a couple slices of bread, and that was it. And there was a lot of what they called them bums. I mean, people come up from the south, they would get on the freight trains. You know, they had, years ago, they had the freight cars would be open. I mean, the doors would be open.
Yeah.
And they used to come by, some of them used to come by here when we first lived here. And if the train slowed down, they would get off and they would come to your door and want to know if they could, if you'd give them a sandwich to eat.
Oh, really?
Didn't they do that here, Jewel?
Yeah.
So you had a lot of that because the train tracks right by your
house.
Yeah,
right by here. Yeah, and they were going up north, you know, in different places looking for a job. And of course, they had to have something to eat. But most of the people were would give them a sandwich or something.
So most folks had enough to get by on during the Depression then? Huh?
Yeah. You know, they got by, but on very little, lived on very little food.
Did you ever go hunting or fishing when you were a kid?
Yeah, I did a lot of fishing when I was young, from the time I was 5 or 6 years old, because I lived right on the Raisin River, right on the bank of the river. Mm-hmm. The river run right through our backyard. And we didn't have no fish pole like they got today. We just had you get a branch of a, small branch of a tree, you know, and you just, but they always had cord string and a hook. That's all you needed. You get worms and you throw it in the river. You could catch rock bass and bullheads and carp. You could catch any kind of fish back when I was young. Of course, the pollution. The River Raisin was polluted there for several years and they get away with a lot of fish. But it's come back now. There's a lot of bass and pike in the river. But
this was back in the 1920s. Huh?
Yes, and back in the 1920s and 30s.
Well, there probably were a lot more fish around.
Yeah.
You didn't have to have a fishing license to fish.
No.
There probably weren't any conservation officers around to give you a citation anyway, right?
Still, today, you don't have to have a fishing license until you're, I think it's 16. You don't have to have a fishing license.
Oh, okay.
Up until you're 16. After 16, you're going to have a license. Yeah, they had, when I was in my teens, they had conservation officers. We had one in Monroe, and they were continuing. I used to trap some too, but you had to set your traps supposed to be at least 6 foot from the hole where the muskrats would go in the sides of the ditch. Set them in the runs where they had. But if you caught a conservation officer, one time I had some traps set in a ditch and I had some set up next to the hole. And they would come out and they would pick up all your traps, those traps that were set by the hole. And you didn't never got them back. They would keep them. But, and then there was a lot of...
Why, you weren't supposed to trap, or...?
No, you weren't supposed to set your trap up next to the hole where the animals, where the muskrats came out. Oh. You had to set it out farther where they had runs, mm-hmm. in the run. So you didn't catch too many that way.
No. What was crime generally like back then?
Crime was... was nothing compared to what it is today.
Is that in part due, though, to the where there just wasn't as many people, or do you think, or?
No, of course there wasn't as many people, but still, people seemed to obey the laws more than they do today. I mean, crime today, you hear a lot of them, even in daylight, you know, and most of them used to be at night, they would break into homes or something like that, but you very seldom, nobody locked their doors back then. And
Did you have a lock on your door? Like
yeah.
One of the skeletal keys?
Keys? Yeah, everybody had locks on their doors, but...
So they all had the same key then, right?
Yeah, you had one
that
key that would
key.
Lock. It would be, usually you could use it on both of your locks. Yeah. You say skeleton key, yeah. It was a key that would unlock most of the locks.
Oh.
A real thin key, and they would work okay.
So you didn't have to be careful about... walk around on the east end of Monroe or anything?
No, at night or anything, you know. Crime was nothing like it is today.
So you could pretty much trust people?
Yes, we could.
People probably never even locked their car doors.
Well, I don't think, on them, a lot of them older cars, they had locks on the doors. They just had the handle. And of course, they got to having keys or locks that they put in the handles. That was later on the cars that they put in the cars. But
so did you ever get to travel anywhere, like to a big city?
No, my mother had a car, and we would go out into the country to some of our relation once in a while. Drive out there probably on a Sunday when she didn't have to work. But other than that, nobody traveled too far away because the roads weren't that good and the cars weren't that good back then either.
Were the roads pretty muddy if there was like periods of a lot of rain?
All the side roads. I can remember in this Model T car that we had, my grandparents, well, we lived in Dundee, and my grandparents lived out here on the Rock Road, and we went down, down on Douglas Road, down where Elmer Bowman lives, and if you got out of the track, there was the ruts in the roads were so deep in the spring, you know. You do just one track, and if you got out of the track, you got stuck. So I was with my dad one time. I must have been maybe only 4 or 5 years old. And we got down just before we got to Ralph Road, about a mile, and we got out of the rut into the mud. And I remember my dad breaking up some brush and things along the road to put under the wheels so we could get get back out and get in that straight track and keep on going. Yeah, we got stuck a lot in a lot of these old roads because there was no gravel back then. It was all dirt before they started putting gravel on the roads.
Were there any street cars or like that they used tracks for transportation in Monroe?
Well, there was a train. There was some trains back then. There was one train that run from Adrian into Monroe, run through Ida, down into Monroe, right down Front Street, or Second, First Street, went right down to the east end of Monroe. There was a couple of factories down there, and they took equipment and freight and different things, picked it up from down there. And then they had in Dundee, from Dundee up to Tecumseh, they had what they call an urban car. It was just like one passenger car. It was like on a train when you have passenger cars, you know, for the people who were just about the length of one of them, and it was motorized itself, had a motor in it, and it would take people from Dundee up to up along through Tecumseh and Ridgeway and different places and let them off. That was one of the modes of travel.
Did they have them in the city too, or?
No. No, they didn't have any in the city. It was just if you wanted to go from town to town, you know, out in rural area. They had streetcars that, there was one that ran from, along Summerfield Road. It ran into Toledo, because my mother when she was young, she used to ride on it. And different ones would take it into Toledo to where they worked.
Were trains the main vehicle of transportation, like moving goods from one town to another, or were ships or trucks used for this too?
Oh, there were not too many trucks, and it was mostly trains. And after, back several years ago, then they started using big semi trucks the trains kind of went out of business. Some tracks, like that one from Adrian into Monroe, they just pulled it right up and they did away with it. But most of the big tracks, like from Toledo to Detroit or different places, they still have a lot of freight trains carrying freight.
Because Monroe is right on the water, did they ever have anything brought in by ships, boats?
Yes, they had down at Bress Bay in Monroe, out on north of the North Dixie. There was a creek down there, and Swan Creek, I think it is, run right out into Lake Erie, and there was a drive called Pearl Drive. And they had built a stone, like a stone dike, right out into the lake, and the small ships, small boats would come up and pull up into that, alongside of that dock. It was just made out of stone, and they would bring different things in there by ship. And the stones, if you drop an anchor in that area, right at the end of that street today, the stones are still there. They let them settle right down, and they're right in the lake bottom, right today. We used to fish down there and drop an anchor in there, and you could tell right when you were over the rocks. And they, the Raisin River had a port, and they brought things in up in the Raisin River there for years with the boats. That's before they used a lot of trucks. and the semis, the freight stuff. Now that most of your goods is trucked. Use trucks, semis there. From town to town.
How important were trains around the Wulu area where you live now?
Right now?
Yeah. Well, I mean back then.
Trains were really important back years ago because they used to, on the Ann Arbor Railroad, it used to run from Toledo way up to Frankfort, Michigan, up north. But then the last, I think probably the last 20 years or so, the business got so slow that the train only goes to Ann Arbor now. And they cut all of that track out up to Frankfort, Michigan. And they used to have passenger trains on the, because my wife used to, the train used to stop here in Lulu, and she would take the train, ride the train into Dundee, the school.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And when they had the Ohio-Michigan game, they put on they probably have 10 or 15 cars, passenger cars, and a lot of the people from Ohio would take the train up to Ann Arbor, up to the football game, and the same, likewise, when the Michigan would play Ohio, they would take the train, and they always put on an extra 10 or 15 passenger cars, but then they did away with that, too, because mm-hmm. everybody has automobiles now, and they drive.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they had a post office in the store building right next to the railroad here. In the mail, they had a large round hoop out on the along the railroad track, and when the train would come by, it had an arm they would push out from the train, and it had a kind of a leg on it, or an arm on it, and it would go into that loop. And that was the mail bag, and they would pick up the mail that way. And then when they came back, they would drop it off the same way. Yeah.
So what was the area around Monroe like back then? I mean, as far as the city was concerned. Mentioned you hunted and stuff around Monroe. What was
Monroe?
It? Yeah, what was it like back then? I mean,
well, on most all of the roads leading out of Monroe were just out of the city limits. Monroe, them were all farms back at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And when I go into Monroe, not these days, I can remember all the big farms that used to be there. You know, it was right outside of the city limits of Monroe.
Oh yeah,
they were all farms, farmland. Now this is Monroe is spread out in subdivisions, and those are all homes. They did away with all them farms now.
So what was like was like Telegraph Road, that area that's all built up there now. What was that?
Yes.
Like?
Well, from the bridge, from north, what is that road? Elm Street. From the Elm Street bridge there on Telegraph Road. From there, down Telegraph North and the west, that was all farmland when I was a teenager, when I lived mm-hmm. in Monroe. And there was a farm just outside of Monroe, because farmer had a lot of milk cows, milk cattle. And I can remember, when I lived in Monroe at that time. I was about 12, 14 years old. And I forget his name, but they said that he had that night his barn caught on fire. And I don't know, it was had 25 or 30 cows that burned up, that was, or partially burned, and what those that had died and those that were partially dead, of course, they killed them all, and they started a great big fire there, and they just kept throwing them cattle on there in that fire until they were all burned up.
And where was this fire at now?
Just west of the Telegraph Bridge there on the, well, it would be Elm Avenue.
So that whole area there was farm?
That whole area was farm, yeah.
That's hard for me to imagine.
And that's all grown up there in the last, my wife would probably say 75 years. Yeah, because I was 75. I was around 10 when I lived in Monroe. And being the age I am now, it was 75 years ago. And it's just spreading out more and more. I mean, there's more subdivisions, more homes going in there. Where the fairgrounds is, that was all farm ground in there. And the one farmer, we used to, he had a woods in the back of his place that was up towards Monroe, farther up where the high school is now.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to, in the wintertime, we didn't have much to do on the farm, so we made wood. We'd go there and cut wood and split it and cut it up in blocks and sell it for $2 a cord. People didn't have hardly anything to do back then. I mean, to make a few dollars, I mean, you did most anything you could.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one way that we had my stepfather and I made some wood for in Ida one winter. They had cut all the logs out of the woods and all the limb wood, top wood was in there. And this farmer had a team of mules. So he let us use his mules, and he had a bobsled. In the wintertime, the snow was on. And we, the mules, you know, we go down through the wood and cut up the wood in the maybe 8 or 10 foot lengths and bring it up. We had we had what they call a buzz pile. That was back then. They had a buzz saw with a blade about 3 foot around, big blade. You saw it. If you saw them buzz saws,
no.
They run them with a tractor, put a belt on them, and we had a pile of wood there, maybe 100 foot long, and then it had a table on it. It was retractable. You'd push it up if you wanted your wood in lengths of 8 inches. You'd run the log over about 18 inches, then you'd shove it up into the saw, and it would cut it off. And
mm-hmm.
We had one fellow throwing it away, and one fellow on the saw pushing it, one fellow helping carry it up there, and we did away with that whole 100 feet of logs cutting up in the wood.
Of course, I imagine everybody burned wood back then, so
a lot of people
burned
wood back then.
Easy
wood
to get
coal.
Rid of it.
Yeah. And I think we had, we must have cut up about 100 cord of wood that winter and sold it all for $2 a cord.
Where'd they get coal from? I mean, did it come from trains from
trains.
Down south?
Trains brought it in from the south.
Right.
Yeah, and during Depression time, when the trains would slow down in Erie, a lot of the fellows, people from Monroe that didn't have money for fuel, they would jump on that train, on the coal cars, where the coal cars was, And as the train was going along, they'd throw the coal off on the side of the railroad. And then after the train got through, well, they'd have some fellow with a little old truck, and they would come by and pick up all that coal and take it home and burn it. Those are rough times. That was during the Deep Depression. People didn't have money for anything.
Do you remember anything about the Newton strike?
No.
That factory back in Monroe at that time?
No, where was that Newton steel mill? Was that in the...
It was down on Elm Street.
On Elm? River.
Yeah.
Down where the Ford plant is now.
Exact spot.
Yeah. No, I don't remember too much about that. I knew some people that worked there, and they had a big strike at that time, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there was a lot of people. That was during the Depression days, too, in the 30s, I think.
Yeah, it was.
No, I don't remember too much about that. I heard about it, and I knew some people that worked there, but that was about it.
So you said you were in World War II. When did you get drafted? Were you drafted?
I was drafted, yes. I worked at your bomber plant in Ypsilanti in the tool and die department. And I got one deferment. And I wasn't a skilled laborer. I was classified as semi-skilled. And that was when they threw the Battle of the Bulge in Germany, tried to come down into Belgium and Holland. That was their last ditch run that they tried to get down through there. Mm-hmm. Of course, they didn't have hardly any men back that time, but all they had, they threw down into that Battle of the Bulge. And so anybody that was not in skilled work, making things for the service or for the army, was classified as semi-skilled, and you had to be drafted. Our oldest daughter, Karen, she was about 10 months old when I went into service.
Mm-hmm.
And we had people from the South. One fella had 10 children, and he was drafted. And another fella up in Michigan here had 6 children, Andy Rose. And he worked in a paper mill, and it wasn't classified as Army labor.
So if you were a skilled worker, you didn't have to go? You
didn't have to go, yeah. But I was in the States here for a year, and then we were sent overseas, and I was overseas for a year. I was in the service for about 2 years.
So they trained you here in the United States?
Mm-hmm.
Where they did?
In Florida. Camp Gordon Johnson.
So you went over by ship?
We went over by ship. It was a fleet of ships. The Germans had sunk a lot of ships, torpedoed them, you know, while they were in convoy. And I don't know, there must have been 10 or 15 ships in our convoy going across. But by that time, the U.S. Ships had taken care of a lot of the German submarines. I mean, there wasn't too many left because they sunk a lot of them. But we had to run at night with no lights. You couldn't, any fellows that wanted to light a cigarette or anything, they had to stay inside the ship. They couldn't go out on the deck or anything.
Oh, really?
There was no lights because as soon as he saw that light, you know, them submarines were on the prowl all the time looking for ships to sink. But we never got into that. It took us 10 days to cross.
So they didn't have any radar systems to find your ships. They can only find them by seeing them.
Yeah, at night.
Okay. Did you see other ships being bombed or in the process of sinking from being bombed?
No, I never saw any being bombed. When we were in Antwerp Harbor, we saw the first, Germany was experimenting with different types of planes yet, you know, and there was no jet planes at that time. They were all propeller driven planes. And we saw the first jet plane that Germany had made came over Antwerp Harbor one morning. It dove down and it dropped two bombs. And we were tied up on the dock in the harbor. And one of them fell right in the hold of a ship. The bomb and the ship was tied up to the dock and it went straight down. That's all it was. Just the superstructure was sticking up. It just sunk right there. And the next one, the bomb landed. He dropped two bombs. And the next one landed just on the dock area, right next to a police barracks. And it made a hole in there, probably big enough, almost big enough you could put this house in it. Two bombs. And then they were dropping all of those V1 bombs that were loaded with fuel. It was like a little airplane, and it kept sending them over. I think it was
Probably weren't any conservation officers around to give you a citation anyway, right?
Still, today you don't have to have a fishing license until you're, I think it's 16. You don't have to have a fishing license.
Oh, okay.
Up until you're 16. After 16 you're going to have a license. Yeah, they had, or when I was in my teens, they had conservation officers. They had one in Monroe, and they were continually, I used to trap some too, but you had to set your traps, supposed to be at least 6 foot from the hole, where the muskrats would go in the sides of the ditch, set them in the runs where they had. But if you caught a conservation officer, one time I had some traps set in a ditch and I had some set up next to the hole. And they would come out and they would pick up all your traps, those traps that were set by the hole. And you didn't never got them back. They would keep them. But, and then there was a lot of...
Why, you weren't supposed to trap or...?
No, you weren't supposed to set your trap up next to the hole where the animals were muskrats came out. You had to set it out farther where they had runs, in the run. So you didn't catch too many that way.
No. What were they like back then?
Crime was nothing compared to it is today.
Is that in part due, though, to the, where there just wasn't as many people, or... Do you think, or?
No. Of course, there wasn't as many people, but still, people seemed to obey the laws more than they do today. I mean, crime today, you hear a lot of them, even in daylight, you know, and most of them used to be at night, they would break into homes or something like that, but you very seldom. Nobody locked their doors back then. And
did you have a lock on your door? Like a skeletal key, one of the skeletal keys?
Yeah, everybody had locks on their doors, but
so they all had the same key then, right?
Yeah, you had one
key. Skeletal
that
key.
It would be, usually you could use it on both of your locks. Yeah, you say skeleton key. Yeah, it was a key that would unlock most of the locks.
Oh.
a real thin key, and they would work okay.
So you didn't have to be careful about walk around on the east end of Monroe or anything?
At night or anything, you know. Crime was nothing like it is today.
So you could pretty much trust people?
Yes, it's good.
People probably never even locked their car doors.
Well, I don't think on them, a lot of them older cars, they had locks on the doors. They just had the handle, and then of course they got to having keys or locks that they put had it put in the handles. That was later on the cars that they put in the cars. But
so did you ever get to travel anywhere, like to a big city?
No, my mother had a car. And we would go out into the country to some of our relation once in a while. Drive out there probably on a Sunday when she didn't have to work. But other than that, nobody traveled too far away because the roads weren't that good and the cars weren't that good back then either.
Were the roads pretty muddy if there was like periods
of
a lot of rain?
All the side roads. I can remember in this Model T car that we had, my grandparents, well, we lived in Dundee, and my grandparents lived out here on the Roth Road, and we went down down on Douglas Road, down where Elmer Bowman lives, and if you got out of the track, there was the ruts. And the roads were so deep in the spring, you know. You were just one track, and if you got out of the track, you got stuck. So I was with my dad one time. I must have been maybe only 4 or 5 years old. And we got down just before we got to the Ralph Road, about a mile, and we got out of the rut into the mud. And I remember my dad breaking up some brush and things along the road to put under the wheels so we could get back out and get in that straight track and keep on going. Yeah, we got stuck a lot in a lot of these old roads because there was no gravel back then. It was all dirt before they started putting gravel on the roads.
Were there any streetcars or like that they used tracks for transportation in Monroe?
Well, there was a train. There was some trains back then. There was one train that run from Adrian into Monroe, run through Ida, down into Monroe, right down Front Street, or Second, First Street, went right down to the east end of Monroe. There was a couple of factories down there, and they took equipment and freight. Different things, picked it up from down there. And then they had in Dundee, from Dundee up to Tecumseh, they had what they call an urban car. It was just like one passenger car. On a train, when you have passenger cars, you know, for the people, it was just about the length of one of them. And it was motorized itself, had a motor in it, and it would take people from Dundee up to up along through Tecumseh and Ridgeway and different places and let them off. That was one of the modes of travel.
Did they have them in the city too, or?
No, they didn't have any in the city. It was just if you wanted to go from town to town, you know, out in rural area. They had streetcars that, there was one that ran from, along Summerfield Road. They run into Toledo, because my mother used, when she was young, she used to ride on it. And different ones would take it in. So Toledo to where they worked.
Were trains the main vehicle of transportation, like moving goods from one town to another, or were ships or trucks used for this too?
Oh, there were not too many trucks, and it was mostly trains. And after, back several years ago, then they started using big semi trucks, the trains kind of went out of business. Some tracks, like that one from Adrian into Monroe, they just pulled it right out and they did away with it. But most of the big tracks, like from Toledo to Detroit or different places, they still have a lot of freight trains carrying freight.
Because Monroe was right on the water, did they ever have anything brought in by ships, boats?
Yes, they had down at Bress Bay in Monroe, out on north of the North Dixie. There was a creek down there, and Swan Creek, I think it is, run right out into Lake Erie, and there was a drive called Pearl Drive. And they had built a stone, like a stone dike, right out into the lake. And the small ships, small boats would come up and pull up into that, alongside of that dock. It was just made out of stone, and they would bring different things in there by ship. And the stones, if you drop an anchor in that area, right at the end of that street today, the stones are still there. They let them settle right down, and they're right in the lake bottom, right today. Mm-hmm. We used to fish down there, and drop an anchor in there, and you could tell right when you were over the rocks. And they, the Raisin River had a port, and they brought things in up in the Raisin River there for years with boats. That's before they used a lot of trucks and semis, the freight stuff. Now that most of your goods is trucked. Use trucks, semis there, from town to town.
How important were trains around the Lulu area where you live now?
Right now?
Yeah. Well, I mean back then.
Trains were really important back years ago, because they used to, on the Ann Arbor Railroad, it used to run from Toledo way up to Frankfort, Michigan, up north. But then the last, I think probably the last 20 years or so, the business got so slow that the train only goes to Ann Arbor now. And they cut all of that track out up to Frankfort, Michigan. And they used to have passenger trains on the, because my wife used to, the train used to stop here in Lulu, and she would take the train, ride the train into Dundee to school.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And when they had the Ohio-Michigan game, they put on they probably have 10 or 15 cars, passenger cars, and a lot of the people from Ohio would take the train up to Ann Arbor, up to the football game. And the same, likewise, when the Michigan would play Ohio, they would take the train, and they always put on an extra 10 or 15 passenger cars, but then they did away with that too, because mm-hmm. everybody has automobiles now and they drive.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they had a post office in the store building right next to the railroad here. And the mail they had a large round hoop out on the along the railroad track, and when the train would come by, it had an arm they would push out from the train, and it had a kind of a leg on it, or an arm on it, and it would go into that loop, and that was the mail bag, and it would pick up the mail that way. And then when they came back, they would drop it off the same way.
So what was the area around Monroe like back then? I mean, as far as the city was concerned. You mentioned you hunted and stuff around Monroe. What was it?
Monroe?
Yeah, what was it like back then? I mean,
well, on most all of the roads leading out of Monroe were just out of the city limits of Monroe. Them were all farms back at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And when I go into Monroe, not these days, I can remember all the big farms that used to be there. You know, it was right, just right outside of the city limits of Monroe.
Oh yeah.
That's they were all farms, farmland. Now this is Monroe is spread out in subdivisions, and those are all homes. They get away with all them farms now.
So what was like with like Telegraph Road, that area that's all built up there now? What was that?
Yes.
Like?
Well, from the bridge, from north, what is that road? Elm Street. From the Elm Street bridge there on Telegraph Road. From there, down Telegraph North and the west, that was all farmland when I was a teenager, when I lived in Monroe. And there was a farm just outside of Monroe, because the farmer had a lot of milk cows, milk cattle. And I can remember, when I lived in Monroe at that time, I was about 12, 14 years old, and I forget his name, but they said that he had that night his barn caught on fire, and I don't know, had 25 or 30 cows that burned up, and it was, or partially burned, and with those that had died and those that were partially dead, of course they killed them all, and they started a great big fire there, and it just kept throwing them cattle on there in that fire until they were all burned up.
And where was this fire at now?
Just west of the Telegraph Bridge there on the, what would be Elm Avenue.
So that whole area there was farm?
That whole area was farm, yeah.
That's hard for me to imagine.
And that's all grown up there in the last, well, maybe we'd probably say 75 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I was 75. I was around 10 when I lived in Monroe. And being the age I am now, it was 75 years ago. And it's just spreading out more and more. I mean, there's more subdivisions, more homes going in there. Where the fairgrounds is, that was all farm ground in there. And the one farmer, we used to, he had a woods in the back of his place. That was up towards Monroe, farther up where the high school is now.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to, in the wintertime, we didn't have much to do on the farm, so we made wood. we'd go there and cut wood and split it and cut it up in blocks and sell it for $2 a cord. People didn't have hardly anything to do back then. I mean, to make a few dollars, I mean, you did almost anything you could.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one way that we had a, my stepfather and I made some wood for in Ida one winter. They had cut all the logs out of the woods and all the limb wood, top wood was in there. And this farmer had a team of mules. So he let us use his mules, and he had a bobsled in the wintertime when the snow was on. And we, the mules, you know, we go down through the wood and cut up the wood in the maybe 8 or 10 foot lengths and bring it up. We had a, we had what they call a buzz pile. They didn't cut it out, didn't have chainsaws back then. They had a buzz saw with a blade about, 3 foot around. Big blade, you saw it. If you saw them buzz saws?
No.
They run them with a tractor, put a belt on them. And we had a pile of wood there, maybe 100 foot long. And then it had a table on it. It was retractable. You'd push it up. If you wanted your wood in lengths about 18 inches, you'd run the log over about 18 inches, and you'd shove it up into the saw, and it would cut it off. And
mm-hmm.
We had one fellow throwing it away, and one fellow on the saw pushing it, one fellow helping carry it up there. And we did away with that whole 100 feet of logs cutting up in the wood.
Of course, I imagine everybody burned wood back then, so
a lot of people
burned
wood back then.
Easy
wood
to get
coal.
Rid of it.
Yeah. And I think we had, we must have cut up about 100 cord of wood that winter and sold it all for $2 a cord.
Where'd they get coal from? I mean, did it come from trains from
trains.
Down south?
Trains brought it in from the south.
Right.
Yeah, and during Depression time, when the trains would slow down in Erie, a lot of the fellows, people from Monroe that didn't have money for fuel, they would jump on that train, on the coal cars, where the coal cars was, and as the train was going along, they'd throw the coal off on the side of the railroad. And then after the train got through, well, they'd have some fellow with a little old truck, and they would come by and pick up all that coal and take it home and burn it. Those were rough times. That was during the Deep Depression. People didn't have money for anything.
Do you remember anything about the Newton strike?
No.
The factory back in Monroe at that time?
No, where was that Newton steel mill? Was that in the...
It was down on Elm Street.
On Elm?
River. Yeah.
Down where the Ford plant is now.
Exact spot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I don't remember too much about that. I knew some people that worked there, and they had a big strike at that time, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there was a lot of people. That was during the Depression days, too, in the 30s, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
No, I don't remember too much about that. I heard about it, and... I knew some people that worked there, but that was about it.
So you said you were in World War II. When did you get drafted? Were you drafted?
I was drafted, yes. I worked at the bomber plant in Ypsilanti in the tool and die department, and I got one deferment, and I wasn't a skilled laborer. I was classified as semi-skilled, and that was when they threw the Battle of the Bulge in Germany tried to come down into Belgium and Holland. That was their last ditch run that they tried to get down through there. Mm. Of course, they didn't have they didn't have hardly any men back that time, but all they had, they threw down into that Battle of the Bulge. And so anybody that was not in skilled work doing, making things for the service or for the Army was classified as semi-skilled, and you had to be drafted. Our oldest daughter, Karen, she was about 10 months old when I went in the service.
Mm-hmm.
And we had people from the South. One fella had 10 children, and he was drafted. And another fella up in Michigan here had 6 children. Andy Rose. And he worked in a paper mill, and it wasn't classified as Army labor.
So if you were a skilled worker, you didn't have to go? You
didn't have to go, yeah. I was in the States here for a year, and then we were sent overseas, and I was overseas for a year. I was in the service for about 2 years.
So they trained you here in the United States?
Mm-hmm.
Where they did?
In Florida. Camp Gordon Johnson.
So you went over by ship?
We went over by ship. It was a fleet of ships. The Germans had sunk a lot of ships, torpedoed them, you know, while they were in convoy. And I don't know, there must have been 10 or 15 ships in our convoy going across. But by that time, the U.S. Ships had taken care of a lot of the German submarines. I mean, there wasn't too many left because they sunk a lot of them. But we had to run at night with no lights. You couldn't, any fellas that wanted to light a cigarette or anything, they had to stay inside the ship. They couldn't go out on the deck or anything.
Oh, really?
There was no lights because as soon as he saw that light, you know, them submarines were on the prowl all the time looking for ships to sink. But we never got into that. It took us 10 days to cross.
So they didn't have any radar systems to find your ships. They could only find them by seeing them.
Yeah. Yeah, at night.
Okay. Did you see other ships being bombed or in the process of sinking from being bombed?
No, I never saw any being bombed. When we were in Antwerp Harbor, we saw the first, Germany was experimenting with different types of planes yet, you know, and there was no jet planes at that time. They were all propeller driven planes. And we saw the first jet plane that Germany had made came over Antwerp Harbor one morning. It dove down and it dropped two bombs. And we were tied up on the dock in the harbor. And one of them fell right in the hold of a ship. The bomb and the ship was tied up to the dock and it went straight down. That's all it was. Just the superstructure was sticking up. It just sunk right there. And the next one, the bomb landed. He dropped two bombs, and the next one landed just on the dock area, right next to a police barracks. You know, it made a hole in there, well, probably big enough, almost big enough, you could put this house in it. Two bombs. And then they were dropping all of those V1 bombs that were loaded with fuel. It was like a little airplane, and it kept sending them over. I think there was 90-some that they sent over on New Year's Day in 1944. They were just dropping all over. Yet, on the outside of Antwerp Harbor, they had, the English had some anti-aircraft guns. They were called Bofors. There was four guns, and there was two on the top and two on the bottom. And every time one of those small planes would come over, those B-1s, they would fire at them. And every time they hit one, you could see there was a big orange ball. I mean, they were filled with dynamite. And when they run out, they had them fueled so they would drop right on Antwerp Harbor. Some of them went across the channel over to into England. England got bombed with a lot of them, too. But all of the buildings in Antwerp Harbor were all masonry and brick, stone, and there was just one story laying on another. I mean, there was hardly any buildings left there at all. They were all bombed.
Were you ever wounded over there?
Pardon?
Were you ever wounded in World War II?
No, other than when I got wounded in the harbor from that rope I was telling you about that was tied up. That's the only wound I ever got.
Oh, so you had a rope or something hit you?
Yeah, it was one of these big hawsers that they tied the ships up with. Came up from on the rub rail of our tug, you know. And I was just looking over, watching it, what it was doing. That's the last I remember. And when I come to it, the doctor was putting stitches in my jawbone.
So yeah, the rope snapped loose then?
Yeah, it snapped loose off of that rub rail and it came right up, and it was so quick that I didn't even see it. The next thing I knew, I was laying on the deck of the boat.
It's one of those big ropes too, huh?
Big ones, yeah. They were about 3 inches around.
Wow. So you were in the Battle of the Bulge then?
Yeah, I was there when they sent the Battle of the Bulge down in there. Of course, they only got down to the Belgium. They never got in. Well, I guess they did get into northern Belgium. But by then, you know, the U.S. troops were all scattered out because they figured they had Germany pretty well stopped. And by the time they got all these troops back together, that was one of the hardest winters that they ever had there. And a lot of our soldiers froze to death. They didn't have the clothes. And I think there was some close to 2,000 soldiers were killed in that Battle of the Bulge. Same with the Germans. They had about the same amount. But that was their last...
Do you remember any one-on-one confrontations with people, or are you...
No.
Where you had to kill somebody, or...?
No. No, we were in the harbor on our tugs, the only people we had to deal with was the... It was the Belgian individuals. But we had this tug, and then there were a lot of canals in Belgium, and we had to pull, a lot of the people lived on these barges, big barges, and they had fuel on them and different things.